Day by day, and with each passing moment, strength I find to meet each trial here, trusting in my Father's wise bestowment. I've no cause for worry or for fear. He whose heart is kind beyond all measure gives unto each day what he deems best. Lovingly, it's part of pain and pleasure, mingling toil with peace and rest. Every day the Lord himself is near me with a special mercy for each hour. All my cares he fain will bear and cheer me. He whose name is Counselor and Power, the protection of his child and treasure, is a charge that on himself he laid. As so be in measure, this a promise he made. Help me then in every tribulation, so to trust thy promises, O Lord, that I lose not faith's sweet consolation offered me within thy holy word. Help me, Lord, when toil and trouble meeting, e'er to take as from a Father's hand. One by one, the days, the moments fleeting, until I reach the promised land.
Thank you so much, Carrie. A wonderful song, Day by Day. It's a very practical song because we live day by day. And we have difficult times, but God's doing a work. In fact, that's very much in tune with what we're going to be looking at in the book of Esther this morning. And so we're going to be turning there in just a moment. I am going to kind of break the news. We gave that gift to Victoria. I just want to say what's in there. I think it'd be good because I know she hasn't opened it yet, but I want to go ahead and say what it is because we did something different this year. Typically, we've given a Bible, which is a great gift to give, or maybe another book to some graduates in college or something like that. But this gift, Victoria, is a different idea. It's just one of our hymnals. But in the pages of this hymnal, and I don't know that everybody got to it, and so if you were missed, you weren't missed on purpose. In fact, we were probably trying to get to you, but we were trying to get to most people, and I guarantee there's people that you're sitting in here that were missed, but we tried to get to as many people as we could. And what people did, Victoria, is they went to their favorite hymn or when they liked, and they, in some cases, just put their name on it or maybe put a little note on it. But everybody's favorite, you know, hymn is there. In my case, I went to like three or four, and somebody already had it on there, and so I found another one, but still a good one. But a lot of people have tried to do that. I just think it's kind of neat, you know, when you go to that and there's that song, or whether you're playing on the piano, you can remember that, oh, this is so-and-so's favorite. And so I thought it was something neat, be a blessing to you that way, and so everybody else could know kind of what we've done. And if you didn't get to do it, you can bug her if you can use it and sign your name on there if you really want to, but we hope that that will be a blessing. All right, done with that. Let's take our Bibles and go to Esther. If you would go to Esther. Esther chapter 2 today. And we're not going to look at the entire chapter. I don't have the ability to go through that today or the time to do it. But we are going to begin chapter 2. We did really a quick review of chapter 1. And we were able to get through it, and as I reviewed it, I didn't really feel like we ought to go back to chapter 1, so we're moving to chapter 2 now, and finding some things here that's in this chapter that I think will be a big blessing to you. And so find Esther chapter 2, and as you get there, then I want to start with just something for you to think through. Have you ever seen, I don't even know what they're called, somebody might know what they're called. Have you ever seen the pictures that people have put together, and when you look at the picture, you see design, but you don't see the picture. It's kind of, what are they called? They're kind of like, they're kind of a brain teaser type of a thing, but you're supposed to look at it for a long time. In some cases, you have to move it out or move it in or move it to the side. I don't know what they're called. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but I haven't looked at one for a long time, but I remember, you know, looking, and I like those kind of things because they're like a challenge. You know, I'm a competitor and I like a challenge. And so you get those things and you really, a lot of times I never do see what is supposed to be in the picture. And then maybe you flip the page or you go to the back of the book and then there it is. And there's that hidden picture that was in there. Anyway, a lot of times when we look at these pictures, some of you know what I'm talking about. Some of you have no clue what I'm talking about. And you're like, Pastor, come on. I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm sorry for that. I don't know how to better explain it. But there's a bunch of lines, designs, or whatever on the page. It makes no sense. And you have to put it a certain way. And then once you do, and sometimes it takes the focus of your eyes a lot of time. It's a matter of focus. And it's training. And then all of a sudden, when you do, it comes out. And then when you look at it, you can almost see it. It's like, oh, that's all I can see there. It shows. But the picture was there all the time. But you just couldn't see it. May I submit to you today that there are times in your life that you don't see God working. But can I tell you the truth? God is always working. God is always working in our lives for His honor, for His glory, for His best and yours. God is always working behind the scenes. And can I tell you that there is always hope behind the scenes of your life? We're going to see in chapter 2 again a faithful God. Let's start with Esther chapter 2. You remember chapter 1, we have the plot. We have an unlikely situation taking place. There's an unlikely setting. We're in a pagan place, pagan culture, pagan people that are living certainly not according to the way that God has set up, living their lives in a big party, in a big self-indulgent way. Unlikely people doing unlikely things that would remind us of stories that would be in God's Word. In fact, you read chapter 1 and you scratch your head and you think, what lesson does God want us to learn here? In fact, we don't even see God's name in the first chapter. And I'll tell you, you're not going to see God's name in any of the chapters. But I'll tell you, God's working is in every single verse, which I will introduce to you now as we go to chapter 2. So we have this situation with a bunch of unlikely people that are going to be used by God in some amazing ways. Now let's look at chapter 2 of Esther and let's see the story continue to unfold. Now, you remember that we have King Ahasuerus, Xerxes the first, that is there. This is after a group of the people have been taken into captivity, into Babylonian captivity. And right now, the captivity is, and the location of that is in the region of in the Persia region. And we have a Persian king here that is in charge of these people, and he's a king that has all kinds of crazy characteristics about him, that has no control and self-indulgent and angry and kind of a lustful, whatever kind of a king that can I say this, God's going to use in a tremendous way. And you remember, they're in lots of party that in those days. I mean, we're talking about a party that went on for a long, long time. And when that party exhausted, then the king held another party, you know, in honor of the end of the party, you know. So So we have lots of partying and a lot of things going on there. And in that, he requests his beautiful queen wife to come, Vashti, to come and to display herself before all the princes and the people of the, you know, the men of the kingdom, which again, jumping into that, was the king, you know, trying to, was this a very lustful thing? It seems as though it was. I cannot tell you exactly what the motivations were of Xerxes when he did this. And I cannot even tell you the exact motivations for Vashti and why she said no. Was she refusing rightly to go and display herself in front of all these men? Was she disobedient to her husband in doing these things? That is not the point of what we're trying to figure out, because I don't know. I don't know really the motivations behind this king and behind his wife. Either way, one of the princes came to the king and said, King, we cannot have this in our kingdom. We can't have this disobedient wife show herself in front of the kingdom, because all of the ladies in the kingdom are going to follow the same way. If the queen doesn't have to be obedient to her husband, then none of the ladies will have to be obedient to their husbands, and that is going to destroy our kingdom. Now, I will say this, whether or not that was well-founded, I mean, we do know the principles are true. The fact of the matter is we have to operate under the way that God has given. Husbands need to be the men of the families that they need to be, and wives need to be the ladies of the family that they need to be. And any time we disrupt that, it's not going to work out. The same thing is true in the church. We have to do our roles as we learn what those roles are. All right, now either way, we jump into chapter 2. So the queen has now been long gone. There's been a lot of partying. There's been a lot of things. There's been a lot of battle. There's been a lot of things that have taken place. And now we come to chapter 2 in Esther, okay? So there's been a time that the queen has been deposed. The king is, I wouldn't say he's been living by himself, because if you study King Xerxes, he's not a man that has been, had one wife, okay? He had many wives. He had a whole harem of wives and concubines and whatever you want to call them that he had. And so he's not been without. He certainly had those, but he certainly wasn't, he didn't have his wife the way we would believe the Bible would teach to have a wife, okay? And so understand that. But join me in chapter 2 now as we look at a first couple verses within the time that we have left. After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, and what was decreed against her. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of the kingdom, of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the women, unto the custody of Higgi, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things be for purification be given them. And let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the king, and the thing pleased the king, and he did so. What good can come out of this story? Because it doesn't look so good. I want to draw your attention, though, to a faithful God. Here we have a situation, and many of you know what is going to happen in Esther. We know that God is going to deliver his people right now in a tremendous way. And by the way, the deliverance is not from the captivity of the Babylonians necessarily, the captivity of the Persians. There's another captivity in which something that they're not even, in a sense, captive of the dilemma yet. Okay? God is working way in advance for something that is going to happen to the minute detail. Now, let me take a time out and remind you about the tidbit that I gave you. As I give you these things, pay of utmost attention, because this passage this morning is going to help you be a better servant in this church to do the work of the ministry, okay? So pay attention, just as if you needed it. for tonight, okay? All right. First of all, let's see our mistakes. Our mistakes. Verse 1 again. After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what had done, what she had done, and what was decreed against her. Many commentators would suggest that when it says that he remembered her, it was almost as if he was standing there, sitting there, thinking, why was I so rash? By the way, this king was, he wasn't a king that thought through a lot of things. His servants, his people that came and gave him advice, he was the kind of one that was like, he heard it and said, that's a good idea, let's do it. He didn't think a whole lot about it. He didn't take the time. Obviously, he didn't take the time to pray about it, because he wouldn't have done that, because he wasn't a guy that followed the ways of Jehovah. But he certainly wasn't even a guy that even appeared to take time to think through it. A guy like Memucan comes through and says, hey, why don't you do this? He said, that sounds like a good idea. Take her away. You know, and it's almost as if now the queen has been gone from him for a while, and he starts to think through, what did I do? I had one of the most beautiful ladies in all the kingdom as my wife. I had a wife. I had somebody to, you know, and was he feeling lonely? Now, again, he had people around him, but I don't know. And I'm not going to suggest to you all his emotions, because I don't know them. But I do know one thing. The verse said that he took some time to remember who he had, and he remembered the decree and how now she was disposed of him. She was gone. I think we can make a fair assumption that here he is a little bit remorsing over the fact that this was gone and taken away from him. What have I done? Because, and another reason why I think that we can conclude this is because immediately his servants come to him and try to remedy, you need a queen next to you. You need somebody to be by your side. And the fact of the matter is God did make it that the husband have a helpmeet by his side. God made roles for a purpose, folks. He made roles. And we know that the man is supposed to be the leader of the home, but he meant for these men to have a person next to them, by their side, to go through life with them. Whether or not this pagan king was following that pattern or not, God intended it for him. And here, I can't even say that he's recognizing that, but we do know one thing. He's recognizing whether it's emotional, physical, whatever it is, social, he is missing, and he is wondering and maybe even wishing, I had someone else. Okay? Now, I want to take it. I don't believe it's the point of the passage, but I want us to think through this just a moment. We do make mistakes, don't we? And we're going to talk about this in just a moment, but a lot of times we make mistakes because we're not following God's plan. We do things on our own, and it sounds right to us, kind of like this idea. And he said, you know what? That's right. We can't have it. Off with her. And we leave, and we make mistakes, and later we come back and we wish we hadn't made those. Have you ever made a mistake? You don't need to raise your hands, because you all have made mistakes. Every one of us. There's not a person that has not made a mistake, okay? We all could raise our hands. We've made mistakes in the past. We have done things that are wrong. And a lot of times we, like this king, would go back and we would sit there and think, why did I do that? What was I thinking? Why did I not just take care of that in this way? Why didn't I answer that way? Why did I not? We wish that we could go back. Can I just say very quickly? I don't think it's the main point. We as a group of people in this church need to be very careful to make sure and follow God's plan. My friend, when we follow God's plan, there are no mistakes. You realize, listen to this, I know this might surprise you, but when you go to the Lord in prayer, when you ask God to lead you and guide you, even when that endeavor does not work out the way you wanted it and intended, but no matter what, when you go to God and he directs you in a certain way and allows certain things into that circumstance or part of your life, when you go to God and ask him for wisdom, no matter what happens, it becomes part of God's plan for your life, whatever happens, and you don't need to worry about it. Have you ever been in turmoil and going to the and buying a new car or something else, and you're afraid to spend the money, and it end up being a lemon? You don't want it to happen. You do whatever it takes to research it. But the fact of the matter is none of us know for sure what's going to happen. What if you were to take some time, and you and your family, you and your wife, or whatever, you pray for a long time about a certain vehicle, and you decide that this is the one for us, and God leads, He provides the money, He provides the people, He provides the situation, and you get it, and a couple days later, it's not working. Did you make a mistake? My friend, I want to tell you something. When we put things before the Lord, there are no mistakes. It's God's plan for you, and that's how we can trust Him. The danger is when we don't go to the Lord in prayer. The danger is when we make the decision on our own. We look at our finances, we look at the situation, we look at all these things, and we don't ask God about it. God can direct away from it, and God can direct towards something. And when He does, then it's up to the Lord, and it's His deal, and it's His car, it's His house, it's His situation, it's His job, it's all of His. You know, recently there was something that happened in our family, and we lost it. Well, I'll tell you what it was. We were on vacation, and it was my fault. I lost $60. Now, for you, that might not be a lot, but for us on vacation, that was hard, because we had a certain amount of money we were going to use. And I put it in my pocket. I had to run in the store to get something, and I had it right next to my cell phone. I have a cover on my cell phone. It kind of like slid right into there on the screen that was there. And I think what happened is when I ran into Walmart to get an item or two, I pulled that cell phone out, and it was right next to my phone. And somebody had a delightful day. They probably found, because I called the Walmart after that, and I asked, you didn't happen to find, $320s on the floor? No. Okay, sorry. And that was really the way she answered me, like, no, get off the phone. Okay, I thought I'd try. If you lost $60, you would try. Anyway, I never found that. You know, and can I tell you this? This is another side note. When I got back and I told Melissa, I was like, I'm sorry, I lost $60. You know, I felt bad for that. But, I had a peace inside of me that said that the Lord was going to supply that. Make a long story short, when we went to one of the churches that we were at, one of the men came up and shook my hand, and in his hand was $100. And so I knew that the Lord was going to provide that money somehow. I really did, and He did. And it was a blessing. But there's certain things in life that seem like mistakes. When we lose things, we make mistakes, but honestly, it's all of His. And one of the reasons why I could rest in losing $60 is because it was His money. Did you catch that? It's His. And whether it's a van getting wrecked, or whether it's $60 here, or whatever your situation is, folks, I want to tell you something. You don't have to worry about it, because it's a part of God's plan. Now, here in this case, we see our mistakes. We've got to be careful to be a part of God's plan, though. Otherwise, we can make mistakes. But God uses the mistakes for some tremendous things. Now, think about this in Ahasuerus here. Was it a mistake that he got rid of the queen? Well, I would say on a human level, he didn't acknowledge God. And so from his perspective, he made a mistake. But can I tell you something? God uses even our mistakes, even when they are mistakes. Let's say that you don't go to God, you don't pray about it, and you make a mistake. God's still sovereign, God's still in control, and God's still going to use it for good. And that's tremendous. And we're going to see that happen. And by the way, as we look at this, God using mistakes, as you are ministering in our church, as you're doing things, are you going to make mistakes in the ministry? Absolutely, you're going to. I encourage you to pray about everything you do. Pray about it. Whether you are doing what some people would call menial tasks here, or whether you're working on Christmas Hope Festival, don't be scared about doing it. You know what? Pray about it and do it. God will give the strength. You know what? Will you waste some of the church money because you cut all the boards wrong? You might do that. But you know what? That's okay, because it's God's. Everybody makes mistakes. I just want to encourage you to pray about it. Would you pray about things beforehand and then go ahead and do them? Can I also say this? As other people make mistakes, because other people make mistakes, and we are very keen on other people's mistakes all the time. I look at my kids, you know, I'm one of the dads, you know, and I struggle, you know, when one of the kids, you know, will break something or do this, and, you know, and I think, you know, chalk it up to a childish mistake or something like that. You know how foolish it is, you know, when I do the exact same thing, you know, and I think through it, and I was hasty in whatever I did, and, you know, for me, I'm just like, well, you know, you got in the way or something like that. But we all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And I want to just encourage you, when somebody else makes a mistake, we need to remember that God uses mistakes. Isn't that a blessing? I'm talking to all of you. Isn't it a blessing that God uses mistakes? Think through that as you are doing the work of the ministry, whether it's you or somebody else. God uses those things, and we just need to trust God and pray about it and move forward. I want you to see something else. The detail even of this mistake, you know, you look and we see how, what, you know, there's, it's details of how he not only, you know, Vashti didn't come in, and then, you know, somebody says, you need to, you know, he gets upset, you need to get rid of her, she's not worthy to be the queen, and he does it. You know, this little, I would say a little detail in the book of Esther, but it's a big detail, isn't it? What if, and what if questions are not very healthy in our lives? But what if this little detail, what if Vashti would have been kept as queen? Now again, you can always ask what if questions, and we're not trying to just dive into a bunch of what ifs. And the point is not for you to always say what if, but my friends, I want you to be called to mind about the detail of God's working in our lives. God uses every little detail to work out the plan. The plan in the end, or the Jewish people are going to be delivered from a plot to kill and destroy God's people. That would be a big deal. And yet even God uses the minute details of a getting rid of a queen that would have changed the entire story. You know, in your life, little details are big. 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 We need to remember that God is a God of detail. God is a God of detail. I want you to see for just a moment our remedies. Okay, so our remedies. Okay, so we make a mistake, right? And again, the king did not go to God. He wouldn't have, because he didn't worship God as God, but he didn't. And so because of a mistake, we try to tend to remedy mistakes, don't we? We make a mistake, and now I've got to somehow remedy it. Look at the remedy that's given in verses 2, 3, and 4. So the king's servants that administered to him said, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces, and I'm not going to read. You get the story here. Okay, we got rid of your queen. Here's a plan. Here's a great plan. Let's go ahead and go through all the kingdom, and let's going to find these fair young virgins, and let's bring them in here, and then let's give the king the opportunity to get to know all of them, and then the king can find out which one he wants for a wife. Sounds like a great idea, right? Well, it depends on who you are. You know, a lot of times, and this is almost going to be the same point, but I want to see it in a remedy situation. So we make mistakes, but a lot of times our remedies are just as faulty as our mistakes, because we fail to do the exact same thing. They made a mistake, but they made the same mistake again. They thought in their own minds, oh, I made a mistake. And so they went to the chalkboard instead of the prayer closet, and they decided to plan how they were going to remedy their situation. And my friend, I want to tell you, on a human level, it was another great mistake. A great mistake to come up with a plan to, can you imagine the situation? What if we did that in America today? Like, what is the president doing? Well, this is absurd. Okay, and what's taking place here is kind of absurd, but they come up with an amazing remedy. Oh, I've got a plan. Great plans, okay? Here's a great plan. We're going to remedy this situation. We're going to do this. A lot of great plans today in America that don't seem to make sense. Sounds very familiar with what's going on here. Let's remedy this situation by doing this. And so they leave God out. And can I say again, as long as our country continues to leave God out, the situation is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And this story is going nowhere but south. This is humanly speaking. Now, in God's mind, it's getting better because God is in control and God's in command of this whole thing. God is the only one can take a story like this and turn it into that. It's impossible for humanity to do, but God can do it. So in God's perspective, the story is going like this, but on our level, boy, this story is really heading south. Now they're coming up with a plan. Let's go get all the young ladies out there and the king can pick. Boy, that doesn't sound so good. But God is still in control. But can I say this as I try to help you as you minister at Faith Bible Church? Don't remedy the situation with more thinking. Don't try to patch your mistakes with more of you. More of you is going to make the situation worse. What we need is more of God. Okay, God, I am sorry. How many of us have made mistakes before that we know we did not acknowledge God? We made the choice. It was a mistake. And there's nothing that we can really do to go back to pray about it. We already made a mistake, right? I've done a fair amount of these mistakes. And I had wished that I had asked the Lord, but it's done now. The problem is what we need to do is we need to take that and we need to say, okay, I made the mistake, but now I need to remedy it and say, okay, but I'm going to pray for this next step now. I'm not going to do the same thing. How many times have I made a mistake? I didn't acknowledge God. And then I think about it and I say, well, here's what I need to do. And I do the same thing over again. The remedy is the same thing. We must go to God. My friend, I want to tell you, no matter what you're doing in our church, no matter how you're living, how you're leading your family, we've got to go to God for our direction. We've got to go to God for our remedies. The remedy here was not good, but can I tell you that here we see a situation without God's direction, if I could say that. But can I flip it right around? We see here a remedy that has, in a unique way, all of God's direction in it. It's so amazing. Will God use this crazy situation that is a foolish thing for the kingdom to do? Absolutely. Because these servants are going out and they're going to get all these ladies, and in one of those ladies is going to be the future Queen Esther that is going to be used in a very specific situation for such a certain time to deliver God's people. It's going to be an amazing thing. God has the ability to do amazing things. Folks, can I tell you that is only a faithful God. A faithful God. God is so good in his faithfulness. So we see a God, we see a situation, a remedy without God's direction. Remember, trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not into thine own understanding. What does he say in the next verse? In all thy ways. Whether it's the first decision or the remedy, in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall, not might, he shall direct thy paths. He shall, he's going to. There is a safety and a freedom. Melissa and I try our best when we make decisions to pray through it all, even the little things. God is teaching us to get more intricate with the decisions that we make. Smaller and small, littler and littler and littler decisions that we make because we see that they have big implications in life. Little things can make big things. And we've got to pray and pray and pray. And we try to do this. We try to pray. And I'll tell you what, as we do, when you do it, there's a sense of freedom and deliverance as soon as you pray because you know now I'm under God's direction. And can I say this, men? You want your wives to trust you in your decision-making process? They need to see you praying. I know that that's helpful. All my wife needs to see is know, she just needs to know that I prayed about it. Because see, once we've prayed about it, we're free. Does everybody understand that? When you go to God for direction, now, unless you're going to pray about it and then go against it, now, obviously, that doesn't work. If you pray about it and God shows you and you still decide, I'm not going to do it, well, of course that's not going to work. But as you yield yourself to God, as you then do what he's called you to do, you cannot make a mistake because God's will is going to be done. And I just want to say, husbands, the greatest way to get your, one of the greatest things to help you lead your family and for your wife to be behind what you're doing is for them to see you on your knees praying and going to God. Listen, I prayed about this. It's helpful in our life. You know, when my wife sees me having prayed about it, she says, that's fine. Because you prayed about it. God's going to lead. We cannot make a mistake with that. We've got to have God's direction. I want you to see, lastly, and I know we're out of time, but our hope. Our hope. You see, we have our mistakes, we have our remedies, but we have our hope. This situation, I want to even take this current situation, and I want to go back now. Go to Ezra. Go to Ezra chapter 1. Go back a few books of Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. Go back to Ezra chapter 1. And I just want you to see, this is the beginning story about God's people being delivered back to Jerusalem, out of the captivity, and then the first wave going back. We have in Ezra, and I just want you to see in Ezra chapter 1, because we're out of time, we can't read all the verses, but Cyrus, king of Persia, and God is giving this king direction of what to do with the people and sending them back. But I just want you to see something, because in the beginning, everybody look up here, just do you remember me saying as we looked into Esther, I said, you know what, some people could have looked at Mordecai and Esther and said, why are these people not going back with the group? Don't they seem to care? And in my studies, I'm starting to see there are some things. My personal belief, and maybe I'll learn more as we go through this, my personal belief is that when we're talking about Mordecai and Esther, I really don't believe we're talking about the most spiritual people around. I really don't. That attests to an amazing God, because we're all there. I really don't look at Esther or Mordecai as super godly people. Now that's just, again, maybe our thoughts will change, but I'm really not seeing that. So there is something to it. Why didn't they go back? But my question was answered why they didn't go back in Ezra chapter 1, and look at verse 5. So Cyrus, king of Persia, is going ahead and he's decreeing this going back. But notice the wording used in verse 5. And then arose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin and the priests and the Levites with all them. Listen to this. This is, they're getting ready to go back. And with all them whose spirit God had raised to go up to build the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem. What had God done? Who went? God had raised these people up in whose spirit he had put in them. God had almost like handpicked some people that he wanted to go back. What if, there's that question again, what if God would have prompted Mordecai and Esther to go back? Now again, what if questions could be dangerous? But I'm telling you, do you see God's detail? Even back years before this, God was working. Do you think that God had the Jewish people in mind in Ezra chapter 1? Absolutely he did. Can I say this, folks? God has had you in mind from the beginning of time. Everything that has happened, God has had you in mind. God is always working. I really hope in Esther you see a faithful God in your life. As you live, as you lead, as you work at Faith Bible Church, you've got to see God's planning and his guiding, even through trials. Even through trials, you know, when we're in Esther and we look at this situation, we know what's going to happen. They're in captivity, aren't they? They're in captivity. That's not going to be the biggest issue. Some have already been sent back, and other groups will be sent later. But this group of people is about ready to be destroyed. These people are in captivity. But go back into Esther. And I want you to see there in the verses that we are in Esther, and we're in chapter 2. Notice this situation. I'm trying to go quickly, but notice what he says in this, in just a couple of verses that are there. He says, I'm in Nehemiah. That's the problem. Be patient with me, Esther. Okay, chapter 2. Now, look at verse 5. Now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity. So there we see the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. Okay, here's a bad situation. Here's a captivity situation. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, which, by the way, I would refer to him as uncle. This is cousin, okay? These are cousins. Obviously, Mordecai was an older cousin, but a cousin here. Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. We have captivity and also a catastrophe that is here. We have difficult situations, but folks, understand, as we look at God's faithfulness here, God absolutely loves glorying in catastrophe, captivity, difficult situations. Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4. And not only so, but we glory in tribulations also. Listen to this verse. Knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. My friend, I want to tell you, there's always hope because God is always working. It's our perspective on life, our decisions that we make. We've got to go to God, but we're going to make mistakes. Yet God is at work. We're going to try to remedy things, and we might make mistakes, and yet God is at work, even to the minute details and how He works through catastrophe, captivity. God has a plan in our lives, and we must see it. And as we do the work of the ministry in this church, my friend, I want you to see something. As we go to God in prayer, there are no mistakes. We trust Him, and we move forward in our action. We do things. And when mistakes happen, whether you prayed, again, in your mind, mistakes, whether you prayed or did not pray, the rightful response is to stop, look up, and recognize a faithful God that has the ability to do anything with anything and everything and whoever He wants to. Can I tell you, in 2022, yes, in 2022, God is just as much in control in your life and in our lives as He was back with Esther and their lives. And He's not doing any less working before, in, and for later as He was then. It's the same. God is always at work in your life. God is always at work. No matter what we do, God's working. We need to be paying attention so that we can be on board. We need to be praying for God's wisdom so that we can be with Him. Sometimes we don't see that picture when we look at it. We look at it and we say, there's just a bunch of marks there. There's a big mess there. I don't see the picture. But my friend, it's all about perspective. When we know a faithful God, all of a sudden that picture can be moved and bang, there it is. Have you ever wondered how somebody could respond so positively to such a great mistake? It's because of a perspective of good and faithful God. God, would you help the people of Faith Bible Church to have a proper perspective of your faithfulness and how you work? God, help us as we do the work of the ministry to look at everything. Lord, help us to pray. Help us as we remedy our situations. Help us to consult you and ask of you and follow you. God, as we see details developing, God, help us to put our faith and trust in a God that is faithful, that is going to do the work that He started so long ago. God, help us. God, help us with the right perspective. God, thank you for being such a good God. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I don't know how the Lord has spoken to your heart. Can I tell you that God is faithful even at providing a way of salvation for you as well? God has brought you here today, and maybe it's to put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ. He has provided a way a long time ago, 2,000 years ago, a way for you today to put your faith and trust in Him so you can have eternal life. If you've never done that, my friend, partake in God's perfect plan and trust Him as your personal Lord and Savior, because He has made a way. He was thinking about you when He went to the cross. Would you take Him today? However God has worked, I trust that today, let's trust. Let's put faith in a faithful God. Let's take our hymnals.